In the name of one God, Holy Trinity, Amen. When I was in graduate school, in particular in homiletics class, or that class dedicated to the art of preaching, it was a moment in time where there was a lot of research happening around attention span. So in those classes, we were told that Americans' attention spans have been reduced to 12 minutes at a time because that's the length of time between commercial to commercial. And then we were warned that you could no longer preach the three-point sermon, that you had to only preach the one-point sermon. I'm going to test the data this morning. I'm going to go about 16 minutes with somewhere around 12 to 14 points. So maybe I'm asking for a little more from you this morning than normal. Last week, you remember that we spoke about this rabbinical practice called making a fence around the Torah. There is a telltale formula that indicates this practice, and it goes a little something like this. You have heard it said in ancient times, "Thou shalt not get mud on the living room floor." But I say unto you, you should not even leave the house during mud season. It's a practice of building law around the law so that the God-made law doesn't get broken, is preserved. And we talked about Jesus adapting this practice so that it might highlight not just the law itself, but what is behind the law. We reminded ourselves last week that it's always love. It's always love that is behind the God-made law. Thou shalt not steal. Why? Because stealing is wrong? No. Because when I steal from another, I jeopardize my chance to create a loving relationship with that person. It upsets the order of the beloved community. The law always points to love. If you can't see the law pointing toward the love, then change your perspective, we said. Reorient yourself to the law in such a way that you can see the love, we heard. That's what we were up to last week. We also laughed a little, and maybe some of us cried a little bit too, because it's refreshing to encounter the heart of the gospel again. In a world of criticism and critique, a world full of comparison and judgment and the false gospel of sin management or feelings of powerlessness in regard to our culture's leadership structure, it's so refreshing to encounter again God, who we know to be love. To hear or to learn again that we are beloved of God. Jesus is driving this beloved point home in this third act of the Sermon on the Mount. That's what we heard last week. And then the story has this big swing from last week to this morning, or at least it might feel that way. It's not the story itself, the story of the Bible. Rather, it's how we tell the story, how we read it in church as we move from one church season into another. This is the last Sunday in the season of Epiphany, the last Sunday in the season of light, or we might say the last Sunday in this season of enlightenment, where we follow the story, or where we are led by the story back to this understanding of love. And we have this dramatic story confirming and affirming our suspicions and positions on Jesus, and if on Jesus, then on you and me. That's already more than 3 points. Let me try to shed a little bit more light on what I'm talking about here, because sometimes I feel like it's easy for us to tune out if we don't see the dramatic attachment the gospel has to this concept of belovedness. The story we have for this morning should be familiar to those of us who have been in and around this church for a long or moderately long period of time. We shepherd a chapel that is appropriately placed, that is dedicated to this very story, the Transfiguration. From last Sunday to this Sunday, we've skipped about 12 chapters of the Bible to get here, to get where we are. As the story goes, Jesus and his senior staff take an adventure up a mountain. Upon their arrival atop the mountain, there is a pretty fantastic mystical experience that takes place. The story says Jesus takes Peter, James, and John, leads them up a high mountain, and there he is transfigured. It says his face was as bright as the sun, and his clothes were more white than anyone could ever bleach them. Now, there are a couple of points here that are very important for us to pay attention to. The first is the most obvious. This is a moment of enlightenment, right? Maybe we don't read the story that way, or maybe we haven't ever read the story that way, but the way that Jesus is transfigured is enlightenment. It's right there in front of us, even if we've never read the story in that way. The second point for us to remember, and we get a little dose of this, though not the whole story, in our reading from the Hebrew Scriptures this morning. The second point to point out is this experience parallels or echoes an experience that Moses has when he goes up onto the mountain to meet God, and he comes down from the mountain with the law carved on tablets of stone. Maybe you remember when Moses comes down, his face shines so brightly that he has to wear a mask when he is talking to his friends and his loved ones. There is another point here that makes it so we kind of can't miss it, but it's like one of those things that's so obvious that maybe we do. Moses and Elijah are on the mountain with Jesus. They are up there. So we get this clue in the reading, as we have been reading this story, that Moses and Elijah aren't just up there to catch up with Jesus. They didn't just see Jesus atop the mountain and say, like, well, it seems like as good a time as any. Maybe we ought to go in and check in on Jesus. No, there is something happening here. This is an important event. It mimics one that is a turning point for Israel in the story, the gifting of God's law to God's people. Moses is enlightened atop a mountain and given a gift, and Jesus is enlightened on top of a mountain and given a gift. It's just one that's a little bit harder to see than stone tablets. So in the Moses story, he's given the tablets, right? In the Jesus story, we have something newish. What we hear in the Jesus story is another echo, even making this sermon way more complicated than it ever should be. We're probably around point 7 right now. So Jesus is up there with his senior staff, and with this connection to God's past work, Moses and Elijah, and rather than a tablet, we hear God's voice. God's voice says, "This is my son, the beloved." in whom I am well pleased. And because we're all so smart and we all know the Bible so well, we're like, wait a minute, wait a cotton picking minute here. That's what God said to Jesus and all the people around him at Jesus's baptism. It's the same thing. I remember hearing that, and here we are, we're hearing it again. Wow, important. And that's not all, right? There's another sentence in there. We get this extra sentence, and it's this critical piece in the puzzle for us to really be able to see the whole image that God is putting in front of us. We hear this imperative from God. Listen to him. God directs us to listen to Jesus. Well, okay, we're open to that. But about what? Jesus says a lot of stuff. Fair question, right? So backtracking in the story and backtracking in the preaching over the course of the last couple of weeks, what are we listening for? Moses goes up the mountain and gets enlightened and gets the law. Jesus builds a fence around the law to make a point. He makes this exaggerated point so that we might not focus on the law, but on the spirit of the law, which is love. It's always love. We know that. Fast forward, Jesus goes up on a mountain this morning and he gets enlightened and he gets reaffirmed as beloved. And then we get this added sentence, listen to him. Listen to him, God says, about what we ask ourselves. And then we follow the track and we get it. We remember Jesus says so many times in so many ways, just as the Father loves me, so I love you. There it is, the missing piece of the puzzle. See, it's always about the love, always. No matter how many points I give you, I'm always coming back around to love, because that's what this whole story is about. So what then do we do? How does this affect those of us who live here today, 2020, Jackson winter, February, maybe significantly more cold than we expected? Here's what I think, and this is maybe 9 through 12. We're about to go into the season of Lent here. It starts for us this Wednesday, Ash Wednesday. We don't dare step one foot into Lent, a season marked by fasting and self-denial, a season marked by self-examination. We don't dare step one foot into Lent unless we too are enlightened. The nature of our enlightenment has to do with our own orientation to God. In the moments of our enlightenment, we have this sense that we too are beloved by God. That happens just as Jesus says. That is the way that the season of Epiphany is intending to orient us. That belovedness, this belovedness, is inseparable from who we are. It is what we're made of. So then, as we step toward Lent, the work of Lent is anything but enlightenment. The enlightenment has already happened. We're already enlightened. Self-examination doesn't have anything to do with enlightenment. It doesn't have anything to do with your being, of who you are at your core. This is so important. We're not entering the season of Lent trying to fix something that's broken. We're not trying to take something broken and fix it. No, that's not the point. As enlightened people, as people of light, as the beloved community, we move towards self-examination, a season of self-denial and self-examination, so that we might get just a little bit better, just a little bit better at love, so that we might encounter a deeper understanding of our own belovedness, so that we might, you know, or if we already have a sense of our own abiding belovedness, if that's where we sit already, then Lent is about learning new and different and better ways so that we might tell the same story that we are already feeling back to the other, that they too are loved by God, that belovedness is inseparable from who they are, that they too are made from love, that it is the substance of their being. Church, if we are oriented to this story, if we are oriented to God as the season of Epiphany seeks to orient us from this place of enlightenment, this place of belovedness, this loving place, then we move toward Lent and the work of Lent by trying to get a little sharper. Here's what I can tell you. If we are not oriented in that way, if we are not yet there, if we don't yet have that abiding sense of belovedness right down to the deepest parts of our heart and our being, that's cool. Don't worry about it. Here we sit in eternity. This work takes time and a lot of practice. But if we're not oriented toward belovedness, then don't take one step toward Lent. Give up Lent for Lent, if that is the case. Because when we come at it from this position, when we come at the work of Lent from this position of being busted or in need of repair, we usually just compound our feelings of failure and not measuring up. And that is not our God-given identity. Failed folks who don't measure up. That is not who we are, it's not who we ever have been, and it's not who we ever will be. That's not our God-given identity at all. You, whether you believe it or not, whether you feel it or not, are loved beyond measure. Amen.